Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome into Attacking Third on this wonderful Friday. We have Darian Jenkins, Sandra Herrera, Lisa Carlin, and I'm Jenny Chu here bringing you the best on Friday. The breaking news that's coming out today is Samantha Mewis announces her retirement from professional football. I think we all had the same reaction to this news, is that we've seen it coming for a while, unfortunately. Sandra, will you tell us why?
Yeah, just Sam Mewis finally making things official. She's been pretty about as open and as transparent, I think, as she has felt comfortable being over the last, I think, what it's now 2 years, but publicly. I think she's been a professional soccer player who has had to deal and navigate with some injuries, specifically within her knee. And over the last course of these last couple of seasons, I think got a little bit more honest and open about how difficult it's been to navigate that injury, not just on the pitch, but literally off of it. The difficulties in going through multiple surgeries, comfortability and movement in general. And with this recent news before her retirement, this kind of mutual parting of ways with Kansas City Current, I think there was perhaps a little bit of a signaling there for the general public to sort of say, what does this all essentially mean? And I think there were maybe a lot of folks rightfully kind of speculating that we could potentially see a retirement announcement from Sam Mewis. I think a lot of folks as well, kind of who are into all sorts of media consumption of the U.S. women's national team, perhaps maybe watching that Netflix documentary, Under Pressure. There was a lot that was actually discussed about that as well through the storyline of Christy Mewis, her sister, discussions about whether or not she would return. The doctors have said to Samantha Mewis that they do not think she would be able to play professionally. So a lot of folks just kind of connecting dots and maybe just sort of waiting for this kind of announcement. But I think even within all of that, it doesn't make today any less bittersweet. Sam Mewis going down really as one of the absolute greats in women's soccer history, both internationally and at the club level. I think you take a look at her resume, it's going to be difficult for anyone to try to match that. World Cup at the senior and youth levels, multiple NWSL titles in this league during her time. And, you know, it's a tough day. I think when you take a look at all of it, the lens of what did it all mean and how did we get here? And, you know, a big part of that success, when we talk about the success of the league, the success of the women's national team, it's because of a player like Sam Mewis.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, as Sandra mentioned, a little bit not surprising for a lot of fans, but still just as sad. And even in Sam Mewis's social media post, she says, "It's with sadness and clarity I'm retiring from professional soccer." And I think the fact that she couples the term sadness and clarity says a lot about what she's been going through, how hard this recovery from her knee has been, and how she has been trying to get back onto the pitch. But the clarity aspect of it, meaning that she knows this is the next step. And she's had a podcast with her former teammate and friend, Lynn Williams. And so she's been kind of dipping her toe into the media side of things, and she's not going far from the game as well. She also announced that she's going to be staying in the game on the media side of things, doing shows and talking about the game, which I imagine that has to help her some to some extent, right? That could be a two-sided coin of stepping away from the game entirely to kind of give yourself some time to recover and take a look at your career, but also staying involved in it and making sure that she's got her finger on the pulse. And that's got to help her to some extent to still be able to talk about it, because it's been her world. I mean, I know that just from playing collegiate soccer, it is your entire world. So then to cut something off completely is really difficult. So I know this is a hard decision, not easy. And of course, wishing her the best and still recovery on her knee, right? Like you want her to be able to live everyday life. Even if it's not playing soccer at the highest level in the world, to be able to live life without pain and do the active things that she wants to be able to do. So wishing her recovery and you know, peace of mind in these decisions, which it does sound like just from social media that she has that, which is good.
Yeah, Lisa, I think you and Sandra said it so well. To go from, you know, I played with Sam in college and then my first 2 years in the league at the Courage. And she's a player that I just obsessed with, because that girl has won literally everything possible. And she was always so humble and so kind and never, ever let it go anywhere else other than that she just loves the game and wants to play. And so you're right. We've seen this coming for a long time. We know she's been out and working through her knee injury, and it sucks when you're kind of forced out of the sport. Like your body just can't keep up with what you're doing anymore. So I know that that's a really difficult decision to come to, especially after such a decorated career, but she has left such a big imprint on women's soccer and changed the narrative around it and just been such a force to be reckoned with. And I'm super happy for her. Congratulations, Sammy. Happy that she's going to be staying close to the game. And hopefully that kind of, I don't know, it's helped me still have, you know, embrace my love for the game and miss it a lot, but not so far enough away that it's totally not a part of your life. So I understand. And yeah, love her commentary. So happy that she's going to be in the media world too. Loving that we're seeing former players coming into this decision more.
That's like a dub for us, right? We're like, I think you're absolutely spot on in that. Like, also have to give the congratulations to that too, because it's tough to get to that decision, but there's going to be so much cool stuff ahead. So
I couldn't agree more, guys. I feel like her impact in the game is going to continue and maybe have a little bit, I don't know, just kind of shine more of a light on everything that she's done on the playing field, but just bringing a light as a player to what she does. She's such an incredible person. With the Snacks podcast, she had done so well. So to see her continue in that, in our realm, is awesome. So speaking of people that leave impacts, let's go ahead and shift focus to Aitana Bonmatí winning FIFA Best Player Award. This was a no-brainer for me. The fact that she, with Spain, won the FIFA Women's World Cup. She also won the European Treble with Barcelona in Spain. I mean, she has so many notable awards that we could run through, but we've already talked about her so much on this show. But I just find her to be such a rare player in the women's game. The vision, the composure that she has is just second to none. She is so calm in the box. You know, when you think about like the elite players and how the game slows down for them, I feel like without a doubt, the game slows down for her because it is so beautiful. And a player like that has been, I don't know, talked about by Pep Guardiola and Xavi and all of these top coaches and top players. It's just beautiful to see. I think one of the coolest things, though, are the fact that we got to see how this was all voted for. So everybody that voted, you can see exactly who they voted for. What do you guys think about her obviously winning and the fact that we've kind of can track who every player, every captain, every coach has voted for?
It's Bonmatí's world, right? It's her era, and we're all just living in it. And I'm just grateful that we get to have a sideline couch armchairs view of it all. So I probably the least shocking award, I think, of that day, you know, for sure. But I'm grateful that when they do these awards that, you know, if you're voting, you're putting your name to it. So it's always fun to see the perspective of players and the captains and how they want to vote for things and coaches as well. And even some of the media who get the honor to go ahead and participate in those awards. But I think maybe this was a player that was probably made everybody's voting job a little bit easier.
So after Aitana Bonmatí, there's Linda Caicedo and then Jennifer Hermoso after that in the voting section. We can go ahead and move on to the FIFA Best 11 because that is potentially controversial in some ways. So we have the goalkeeper Mary Earps for England being the best goalkeeper. In the defender section, Lucy Bronze, Olga Carmona, and Alex Greenwood. A couple of those from England and then Olga from Spain. In the midfielder sector, Aitana Bonmatí, Ella Toon, Kira Walsh. And then in the forwards, Lauren James, Sam Kerr, Alex Morgan, and Alessia Russo. Lisa, anything there that you disagree with or want to just agree with in sense of, you know, maybe absolutely this player deserves to be on the best 11, whichever way you want to take it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of question marks about why Alex Morgan is on this list with San Diego and the United States, especially because when you consider whatever, if you want to pick a U.S. player, if you want to have them on the list, she didn't even win U.S. Player of the Year. That was Naomi Girma, defender. United States had a tough year offensively in the attack. And so I think that's a lot of what people are talking about right now. Why is Alex Morgan on this list, especially when you consider the company that she is with? Mm-hmm. You ran through the list, Jenny, in the roster, but like defensively, Alex Greenwood, Olga Carmona, like hands down, they deserve to be on this list. Carmona is the reason Spain, one of the main reasons Spain was able to score goals and win the World Cup. Of course, Bonmatí in the midfield as well. But then when you look at the forward line, Lauren James, Sam Kerr, Alessia Russo, and then Alex Morgan. Lauren James had a breakout year as a young player, despite some of the adversity that she had gone through as a player, getting a suspension in the World Cup, but she still did an incredible job. Sam Kerr with Australia in the World Cup. I think so much of it, you have to look at the World Game and the biggest international tournament that we had this year at the World Cup. So that's why Alex Morgan sticks out like a sore thumb, because the other 10 players are so deservedly on this list. And there's just a question mark about why Alex Morgan is on this list when the United States didn't have the best year offensively. And even with San Diego Weave, I don't think she had her best year in the league by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. Retweet. I think if we were going to bring a U.S. player onto that list, it's Naomi Girma or Sophia Smith.
Yep.
Honorable mention Trinity.
Yeah. It should have been Girma.
It should have been Girma. It should have been Girma 1,000%. Lisa, I totally agree. I think it's a little bit of Alex Morgan is a very famous.
She's a prolific player. It's a name that, and even for players, I think if you look at some of the voting, like I think it's important, like the note that Jenny made, that you could see kind of how the votes break down. Like maybe there's also a larger conversation to be had about players and their own ability to consume the game at times. You know, we talk a lot about the difficulties and in access to games and in watching games, and players already have a very busy schedule and literally being professional athletes, you know, and then you have to throw in these additional hurdles for them to watch games themselves, you know? Yeah. So I, you know, it's one of those things that you go round and round about. It's like, I'm sure there's people out there that will make a case for Alex Morgan, you know, and maybe they'll talk to us about it after they listen to the episode, or, you know, and we'll be like, oh, those are great points. Yeah, sure. You know, like it happens.
All right. Well, that was our take on that. You know, the majority of those players being from England and Spain, deservingly so, making it so far in the World Cup and them being, you know, top leagues in the world. Continuing with all of these FIFA awards, Marta gets an award named after her. In 2025, it'll begin, or FIFA will introduce a new award to honor her legendary achievements. The best goal scored in women's football will receive the Marta Award. She has played in 6 World Cups and scored 17 goals in 23 matches. She is the highest goal scorer in World Cup history, men or women. If you are a lover of the game that we beautifully describe, you know Marta. So obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you know everything she's done. She has scored 115 goals for Brazil, 17 World Cup goals. I mean, she's incredible. We know that. But to see her kind of be awarded in this way from now on, the player that does so well in a scoring capacity gets named after her. How beautiful for her to get that recognition. Darian, I know you played with her a little bit in Orlando. Anything to say about the legacy she leaves behind and obviously getting some credit for that?
No, I mean, there's not much more I can say. It's beyond deserved. She's the OG, the GOAT, the legend. I love it. If you cried listening to her speech, raise your hand.
Always.
Now, anytime she does media about, you know, kind of passing the torch and her love for the game and just that she wants little girls to remain inspired and that that's how she wants to leave the game. She has truly, truly done it. She has been, even before she knew it, what we all have looked up to and aspired to be in women's soccer and what we've wanted to achieve. She has done that. And now she has an award that's going to be so long lasting. You know, generations are going to pass and her name is still going to be present. Every year, some player is going to get this award. So I love it. It's a huge honor.
I think when you look at the legacy that Marta has left from little girls saying, I want to play it to be like her, right? I want to wear her jersey. I want to have her name on me. I want to watch her play. There's so many elements of it. Now players get to say, I want her award. Like, how cool is that? That now players can aspire to win the Marta award. It's awesome for the GOAT, Marta, for sure. I think this was really cool of FIFA to do and a really great way to honor Marta's legacy.
Yeah, I think I love the way that they're doing it now. You know, we talk a lot about honoring legends and how important it is to make sure that they get their flowers while they're able to receive them, you know, and I love that they were able to kind of bestow this honor for her and kind of have an additional moment. Like there she was again, taking it all in and inspiring and motivating so many of us once again on a stage to that's trying to honor her, but she's making it about a bigger picture of things when it comes to women's soccer. And I think for me, that's such an integral and important piece of Marta's legacy. You know, she's very clearly in a specific phase of her career where she's kind of having those conversations with herself. You know, she's at the point where she's like, okay, let's look at the year in front of me. How do I want to navigate it? You know, joking about that, teasing about that a little bit on the stage. Like, okay, I said goodbye to the World Cup. Maybe I need to say goodbye to the Olympics, you know? So all those little things that kind of make us laugh or smile a little bit in between a very kind of profound speech, you know, is just very quintessential Marta. And, you know, I think back to the World Cup when we were even talking about her as a player and kind of this sort of long goodbye that she's in the middle of at this moment and taking these opportunities to go ahead and kind of praise her and talk about her. And she's just that kind of player. It's great for her to get this honor, receive this honor, see it, and know that we're going to hear it for years to come because that's the player who she is. I don't know. Again, I said this during the World Cup. I don't know if we're ever going to have a player that has had the sort of global impact that Marta has had on the women's game. And I think that is the biggest thing for me. This is a player that has affected, you know, so many parts of not just the CONCACAF region, but in Europe as well. And, you know, I'm on here wearing a Mexico jersey to represent CONCACAF. But I mean, you know, this is a player that has, you know, inspired so many Latin American women and girls and the Caribbean as well throughout the region. I mean, we saw it in that World Cup and that coming together between her and Bunny Shaw. Like, that's the impact that this player has. So I love that this award is being named in her honor. And I'm very curious to see who gets it next year.
Beautifully said. I know we honor her a ton, but can we just mention the dress she was wearing, by the way? Stunner.
Top notch. Top notch.
Stunner. We love to talk about fashion as well. And what a beautiful dress for the occasion. Okay, guys. So we have some more breaking news from today. USSF has just announced that she believes Cup presented by Visa will feature USA, Brazil, Canada, and Japan. We had heard some rumors coming out on the AJC about the teams that are involved in the tournament, but this is now confirmed. This tournament starts April 6th at the future U.S. Soccer Training Center in Atlanta. It's going to be split with Columbus, Ohio, doubleheaders in Atlanta and Columbus, Ohio. What do we feel about this breaking news about the teams involved? And I mean, we've seen these teams in the She Believes Cup before. Yeah. Lisa?
Yeah, exactly. For Canada, I think this is really big for them. This is their third She Believes Cup in 4 years. And as a nation that looks to prepare to go back to the Olympics in Paris this summer as reigning gold medalists after having a really tough World Cup last summer, this is an opportunity for Canada to take on some really good competition in the She Believes Cup and prepare for the Olympics. This is a natural next step for them. I think that Japan being involved in this does elevate the competition this year because of how good Japan is, how well they can compete on the pitch. It's going to be a test for United States and Canada when you look at kind of how this is all going to face out against each other. And I like this. So add in Brazil there. I mean, it's good competition, Jenny. Like, we're getting really, really good matches. Not as many as we've seen in the past for She Believes Cup. They are narrowing down the number of matches actually played in She Believes Cup. But I like this competition. I'm excited to watch and see. This is a big year for international play. And this is a good test, a taste of it before the summer starts.
Huge test. I'm going to take what you said because I'm excited to see what the U.S. does. We're, you know, questioning a lot what's going to happen going into the Olympics. And I think we're going to see this roster and how they're going to change their style of play with Twyla Kilgore and Emma Hayes coming in. Really, we're going to get a real taste of what to expect come the Olympics. So I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a really good test.
I agree with everything that's been said. I think it's a good shout and a note to talk about how it's restructured a little bit in light of the Gold Cup happening in that typical window where She Believe occurs. They said we're going to reformat it a little bit for this year and have it in April and have it just be kind of a 52nd round. So I also really love that the United States and U.S. soccer said if we're only going to play against two out of the three teams in this one, one of those teams is going to be Japan. So I like some of the planning around that already. And yeah, we'll see how it comes to life in April coming off of that window for Gold Cup. I know USA and Brazil are probably considered favorites to do well in that competition. You know, will the two of those teams get to see each other and battle it out for a Gold Cup? We'll see. And will they get to battle it out for a She Believes Cup title? So I love the teams. I know some folks are like, why are we getting repetitious here? But these are three good teams to go up against, especially going into an Olympics. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, great competition heading into that Olympics. And you mentioned there that Emma Hayes coming in May is the plan. So this in April would still be Twyla Kilgore leading the way officially. Awesome stuff. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. And we're going to be talking NWSL transfers when we return. So talking about all the movements that's happening. Stay with us.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back into Attacking Third. Like I mentioned, we're going to be talking about all the transfers and the movements that have been happening in this window. I'm going to run through them quickly, and then we can pick out which ones we want to point out as significant or interesting to us. First of all, Mal Pugh with the largest NWSL deal ever. Sandra, I know you wrote about this. I have 2 million question mark because it's not out there, but I know you'll give us the breakdown when it comes. Casey Fair, 16-year-old, signing to Angel City. Nichelle Prince is going to Kansas City, while CeCe Kaiser is going to Houston Dash. That is like a direct change. We have plenty to talk about on that one. Alexa Barr is headed to Louisville. Natalia Cuica and Shea Groom are headed to Chicago, where Sandra loves to talk about. Cuica is joining from the Portland Thorns. Felicitas Rauch is headed to North Carolina Courage. I think this is something that Sean Nahas was talking about ahead of the move, saying we are very excited for and that his fan club is going to be very excited for. Danny Weatherholt also headed to North Carolina Courage. Nikki Stanton and Ciara King, they signed new deals with the Seattle Reign, a team that has lost a lot of players through free agency and the college draft and all of those movements. Megan Klingenberg also signed a 1-year deal with Portland Thorns. She extends there. So as I've tried to run through all of those correctly, Sandra, do you want to take us through the big one there for Chicago and put that together?
Yeah, we can. By big one, you mean like week. Yes, they're having a massive week. It's wild to think about and hear you run down all of these bits of NWSL like transaction news and finally have a week where Chicago's listed not once, not twice, but three different times for different player acquisitions and signings. Obviously, the biggest one with Mallory Swanson. I think we can all agree that that was probably their main target in the offseason and their long list of free agents, and they really made sure that they came to the table correct, because Malpue has now the biggest and largest contract in NWSL history at this moment. But it's wild to talk about that because it almost feels like we were just speaking about Maria Sanchez and her three-year deal worth $1.5 million, and now we're looking ahead at this five-year deal, also kind of a new thing in terms of the longevity of that deal not really existing before. So a couple of points here for Mal Swanson to kind of make a bit of history in the NWSL. So length of deal through 2028 and also numbers in terms of the $2 million mark. It's understood that it could be around 400. If you do the math over the course of the years, that could put her at that mark. And I think when we're talking about numbers, it's exciting for folks because it's not something that you often see or get to chat too often about within women's professional sports, period, let alone the NWSL. So I think you can literally kind of at this point point off on one hand these sort of big numbers that you can tag to. And I think folks think a lot about Trinity Rodman in that initial deal at the $1.1 million, and then Maria Sanchez, and now we're talking about Malpue. This is like literally three players that you can kind of count off on your hand. But it's massive for not just the player but for the franchise as well. You know, they've had three consecutive off seasons of massive player departure. And now in this rebuild that we're hearing them talk a lot about, that it's going to start with actual culture building. To have a face of the franchise is very important, and they've got that in Mal Swanson. And then they went ahead and picked up massive pieces in Shea Groom and Natalia Cuica. We're talking about players with a ton of NWSL experience that have kind of excelled in their roles on the pitch and have been crucial parts of rosters. We know what Shea Groom did for the Dash in a very difficult era for them during peak COVID 2020 inaugural Challenge Cup, and Natalia Cuica, who's in my opinion kind of a really underrated defender in this league. So to pick up all of these pieces and re-sign Swanson to such a massive contract all in 1 week, I think it's got the attention of a lot of neutrals and saying, hold on a second, don't count Chicago out just yet.
Yeah. I think that's important, Sandra, because Chicago heading into this offseason, so much conversation was they have to sign people. They have to pick up players. Their roster was just dwindling as the days went on. And we have to give some flowers to Sandra because she's on the boots in Chicago. She's got boots on the ground in Chicago. And she crunched the numbers and did the reporting to report how much Mallory Swanson was actually getting at that around $2 million mark. So Sandra, great job on that, the reporting that needs to be done. So thank you. I talked about it at the top of the show, but I'm impressed with Angel City and their signings. They signed the young player at 16 years old in Casey Fair. That's why I'm rocking my Angel City today. And I think it's a really interesting signing. The league in the NWSL changed their rules to allow more younger players to be rostered for teams. And Angel City is taking full advantage of that. And frankly, if I was a young 18-year-old or if I was a parent of a young under 18-year-old, I would want my player to go to Angel City because they've already proven that they've had success with that, with Alyssa Thompson coming in and then signing Giselle Thompson, her sister, in a forward and a defender. And now they get in Casey Fair. So they have the resources and the facility to accommodate under 18 players because, frankly, the way that a U18 player needs to prepare, train, study the game, recover from a game is incredibly different than on the other end of the spectrum, a 35-year-old on a roster. And Angel City has proven that they're able to do that. So bolstering up their roster with Casey Fair, the South Korean international who was the youngest player to play in the FIFA Women's World Cup, just three appearances, but a huge mark from her. The native out of New Jersey is going to LA, and I like that signing for Angel City.
I like that a lot too, Lisa. I think what Angel City's doing is they're really showing that they're willing to develop players. They're not just going to pick players up in their prime and throw them into the roster. No, they're going to work with players. They're going to build them up. They're going to make them pros and take their time and not burn them out. I think we see a lot of players that happens to that are, you know, big names coming into the league, and that's a lot of pressure and a huge adjustment. So I love that this is happening. For me, Nichelle Prince to Casey and CeCe Kaiser to Houston. I think from the outside, I'm, you know what, CeCe had a really good career at Houston. I think she's an amazing player. I'm shocked that Kansas City would get rid of her after the time that she's had there. I think she's been one of the best players in the attack for them. She can play multiple positions. Getting Nichelle Prince is a really good move for them. I think any team is lucky to have her. She, you know, is now back from injury and is full steam ahead, doing what she's doing, scoring goals, being a threat in the attack. My biggest qualm is that they're getting rid of a homegrown player and that CeCe Kaiser didn't have any say in the trade.
Yeah.
I think it is such a slap in the face to the players. You're doing such a disservice. You are also, if you're Kansas City, you're also shouting to the world, who everybody has eyes on the NWSL now, specifically Kansas City, because you're designing, you have the first women's specific soccer stadium. We don't care where you want to go. We're not going to discuss it with you. You can be traded at any point in time. That is so unattractive for players to want to go to your team. Well, I don't know what's going on at the front office, GM. It's not the first time we've heard something like this happening, where a player is notified and finding out with the public that they're going somewhere else and have X amount of time to move. If players were making millions of dollars, you know, if there was a huge bump in pay or something as to why you're being traded to another team, sure, it's a little bit different. It's the NWSL. We're still not making millions unless you're, you know, one of the top tier players. But even then, it still doesn't make sense. I really don't like it. I think if the league needs to, we really want this to be the best league in the world and have the best teams and most attractive stadiums, blah, blah, blah. Treat your players well. She's a great player.
You know, you talk about this being very public that, you know, CeCe Kaiser was taken by shock by this. And she came out with a statement on Instagram saying that, you know, this isn't something she asked for or expected. No conversation that this could happen. My fiance and I have a home here. We have a life off the pitch. And now we have to pack it all up and say our goodbyes. She comes out and says this, right? Last year, Lynn Williams trading to Gotham FC was also, you know, during the NWSL draft, came as a shock to Lynn Williams. We, you know, they talked about it on Snacks, the podcast.
Yeah, it's not the first time.
We talked about earlier.
Alex Fluera.
Yeah.
I didn't know this was happening. I wanted to stay here.
Yeah. I think that what you're saying there, Darian, is so important to the fact that other people on the outside can see it, that there is no, you know, accountability for how the players will feel in the situation. And the backlash that is received to be CeCe Kaiser is, this is professional sports, deal with it. You then bring up a very important aspect of the amount of money being made compared to, say, the baseball players that are being transferred every year in professional sports, right? And that how that maybe changes the, I don't know, how you feel about decisions like that. It's still the NWSL, like you mentioned there.
It's a week before you have to report to market. Some teams start training in 3 days.
Yeah. I was going to say we can even take the money out of it altogether. I think if you have a player that's making $1 million a year, that still sucks to be told that.
So just left it to your life.
To be caught off guard by that. I don't care if you're making $1 million a year or, you know, $37,500, you know, a year. Like it's incredibly disruptive. It's, you know, there's a reason why they say that peace of mind is priceless, because you can't put dollar signs on something like that. So it is, at the very least, adds to a layer of concerns around how players are kind of being maneuvered within the league, specifically in regards to Kansas City current. So fans are starting to be a lot more vocal about it. I mean, they were vocal about it even during that Lynn Williams trade. I think now they've got an offseason here where this has happened a couple of times already. So now they're being even more vocal about it as well. And I think it's very peculiar to just sort of operate in a way where you're like, well, if we're not actually breaking any rules in the CBA, like, it's fine. No, I think there's enough here to say that maybe it's not okay to operate. So I think maybe there needs to be some looking within internally, you know, in terms of how things are operated and played out. It's great to point to all these amazing things that the franchise is doing in one aspect, and then yet have something else on the other side of that spectrum and say, well, what about this, you know, so all these things can be true at the same time, right? Kansas City is filtering in resources and building facilities and doing all these great things. And then the other thing that's also true is that players are shocked, hurt, disappointed when they are being told on with very limited time that their entire lives are going to change in a minute. So it's like all these things can be true, and we're talking about them all on this segment right now. So I think that's tough. I think you really do have to look at yourself as a franchise, as an organization. If it looks like you're getting a rep, don't you want to try to maybe address that, you know, channel that? And I think if anything, that's also just laying down the groundwork, in my opinion, to have another battle for the next CBA negotiations. I mean, these are all things that the players union can jot down and note down and circle back around during the next negotiations. You know, I'm not a player. I'm not a former player, but even just someone who analyzes this league and the game, absolutely, I think this mm-hmm. is something that you need to take a look at moving forward.
No, Sandra, I totally agree. You're right. It's laying the groundwork for another addition to the CBA of you guys think you have too much power and you're totally disrupting lives. But also from a player's perspective, imagine preparing for your job for months in the off season, 3 days before or a week before you're supposed to report. And you know, okay, I'm doing this fitness test. I'm doing this technical test. I'm going to be playing this position. I know the system. I've got my mind right of how I'm going to play at the stadium. I've been doing all of this visualization work and prepping, and I have my community here, my PT, my whatever you need, my psychologist is here, yep. is suddenly yep. disrupted. And then you're thrown into a new market where you have no idea if you fit in, if the coach likes you, if you're going to gel with the locker room, if what position you're going to play, oh, what fitness testing am I doing? There's so much that goes into it that can affect your first few months going into a team where you've had no prep to do it. So yep. just going to call Kansas City out. I think they're sending a really awful message out to their players and players that maybe had wanted to go there, that I wouldn't want to go there anymore if I'm seeing them do this over and over again to players, well-respected players in the league. Well, I mean, that doesn't even matter.
Yeah. At
but
the very
players that are going to get a lot of attention and like call you out and you still don't care and you're still going to do it, it yeah. says a lot.
Yeah, Woo! At the very least, it's conflicting. It's a conflicting message.
Yeah.
No, Darian, you mentioned so many important points there. I mean, moving is so difficult. You mentioned the physical therapist, you mentioned the psychologist, potentially the doctors, like everything that you need to put in order. Having 3 days to do so is very difficult, and just not having the respect from the people that supposedly care about you as a human to tell you ahead of time or to talk to you about it. Obviously, these are business decisions, and like we understand that, but at least like help someone out. You know, having to move is not easy, period. And then having to perform at a high level. The fitness test you aspect, everyone has a different fitness test. Everyone has different film to watch. Like, oh, like the combinations that you're going to make. There's so many great points that you make there, Darian. Thank you. All right, we're going to have to go to a quick break because we've been chatting about this for a long time. We're going to be talking about the WSL weekend preview, all of the action that's coming up today, tomorrow, and on Sunday. So stay with us here on Attacking Third.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's BOLL and Branch.com.
All right, welcome back to Attacking Third. We have the WSL preview for this weekend for you guys. Three big games to talk about. Arsenal up against Everton, 9 a.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Why don't we start there? Obviously, Emily Fox made her debut, but not in the WSL, so she can make it here for them. Arsenal's unbeaten in the last 11 matches against Everton, so that looks to be swaying one way. Darian, do you have any incline on how this one's going to go?
Yeah, I think Arsenal are going to take the win. I hope Emily Fox gets her debut in the WSL. I think she's going to fit right into this system, right? I don't think there's any question. I think it's a really good move by her and Arsenal. And I like the challenge of her playing up against these forwards against Everton. And we really get to see, you know what, is she everything that we've all been talking about on six different shows that we all are on, how she's going to fare out and how she's going to adapt her game to go into this new style of play where you have a lot more time on the ball, a lot more space. It's a little bit more cerebral, tactical when you're going up against somebody. And I think it's going to help her game develop. So I'm excited for it. And I think Arsenal stacked. I think they're going to get the win, like I said at the beginning. But it'll be a good match.
Sandra, anything on this one that we need to look forward to?
I want to see goals. You know, I want to see a start from Emily Fox, of course. But I want to see, you know, some high octane energy, and maybe that might not be the case. I'm hoping with a round of FA Cup that maybe it helped kick off some of that holiday rust, but I just want to see a good match in this one. And hopefully Emily Fox gets involved in that attack and helps manifest some of those goals.
Yeah. It's a chance for Arsenal to kind of lessen the gap between them and Chelsea at this point. And that's what their plan is from now until the end of the season, of course. So this is the first step in what could be the right direction for Arsenal. And that's how they have to think of this weekend's match.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned them right there, Lisa. Chelsea, the Blues, currently in first place. They're up against fourth place Manchester United, 7:30 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday. That's at Stamford Bridge, and that will be on Paramount Plus. Chelsea dominate this matchup, winning 8 of the last 9. But both of these teams, top-notch teams, I mean, tied for the most clean sheets. Chelsea outscore Man United, but I mean, both teams with the ability to score goals up top. Take me through it, Sandra.
Look, we're talking about which teams we find ourselves rooting for. I know Chelsea, you know, you and I, Jenny, typically talk about Chelsea and are high on them anytime we get a chance to chat about their games on the show. And I'm going to say same vibe, but again, similar to Arsenal, I just want to see like a very competitive match, you know, between these two. I think when you look in front of the remainder of the season, you've got these two teams kind of, you know, in good positions in the top of the table, and who doesn't love a good, you know, old-fashioned rivalry kind of match. So I think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs, you know, in terms of the attack. You know, how is Chelsea going to continue to look moving forward in the absence of Sam Kerr? Is this going to be a game where we get to see Mia Fischel kind of build off of what she was producing in that FA Cup round? You know, Lauren James as well. These are the opportunities. These are the moments for these players, you know, moving forward. So are we going to see those adjustments in this game, you know, to be made by Emma Hayes? I think that's what this game is going to be. Like, what are going to be the answers to all of those questions that maybe came out of that FA Cup match? So hopefully it's a dub for Chelsea.
Yep.
I think it's going to be a dub for Chelsea. Also, big fish doing big girl things.
Yep.
I love to see it. I didn't really love Lauren James as the 9. I don't think it suited her well in this system. But I kind of, Sandra, what you were saying, I really want to see that relationship develop between Lauren James and Mia Fischel. Mm-hmm. Injuries suck. It's part of the game. It's Mia Fischel's time to really grasp that opportunity and slide into that position and make it her own. I think learning under a player like Sam Kerr and watching her game, she can probably take elements of that. But she's her own force. I think it's going to be really good. I hope she gets a start in this game. And that we see her kind of building connections more and more, because she scored a goal out of nothing. So imagine what she's going to do when she really starts to build chemistry with everyone around her. It'll be a good game.
Yeah, Chelsea definitely almost stumbled against West Ham. That's when you mentioned that Mia Fischel goal. We talked about it on Monday on the show. We did discuss Sam Kerr's injury and the fact that Lauren James looks a little better with Sam Kerr there. But let's go ahead and move on from Chelsea, because the last thing I want to say is we might see a Caterina Macario debut from Chelsea. So we'll keep our eyes out for that one. Lisa, Manchester City up against Liverpool. Take me through that one.
Yeah, Jenny, this is a good matchup. City right now, they're in second place in the standings after the winter break. They're level on points with Arsenal, which means they're only 3 points behind Chelsea. And the fact that it's so tight at the top of the table at this point in the standings, now Chelsea without Sam Kerr, the eyes of Manchester City have gotten so big. This is their opportunity to chase Chelsea, to catch them, and to try to jump into that number one spot. And frankly, I think Manchester City has the power to do that. You look at who is in City's attack. They are
scary.
Lethal. They've got Bunny Shaw, Lauren Hemp, Jill Roard, Chloe Kelly, Mary Fowler. These are incredibly prolific goal scorers. And for City, over their last four matches, all competitions, they've picked up four wins. They've scored 17 goals in those four matches. Are you kidding me? It's an opportunity for City to continue to find the back of the net in a variety of ways, whether it's crosses from the outside, shots from distance, getting inside the box, creative skill, individual flair down the center of the pitch to find the back of the net. And they've also got a lot of new news coming, right? City announced their brand new facility, 10 million euro purpose-built training facility for their women's team set to open in 2025. So if they can make moves, pick up a win, of course, over Liverpool, who's fifth right now, then they can continue to climb in the standings, get to the top of the table, where not only are players going to want to go there because of this purpose-built facility, but if you're a top team in the league, which they have been, but if they can win, that's only going to do better for them in the future to continue to acquire really top talent.
Yeah.
Beautifully said, Lisa. Oh, sorry, Cedric, go for it.
No, I was just going to say, I'm with you on everything. I'm just really curious, like, what Liverpool's going to show up in this game. They've been so streaky, you know, and it's just kind of like, is this going to be, could this be a blowout even, you know, or could this be another one of those like really tight kind of duke it out kind of battles by Liverpool. I don't know.
I think they might park the bus.
I think it'll be high scoring though, because for City, they average over three goals a game. And so yes, Liverpool, you would think their answer is let's park the bus, but there's too many options for Manchester City in the front.
Yeah, you talk about Manchester City there. Both teams unbeaten in the last five at least, but Manchester City beating Tottenham 7-0 in the last WSL match was back in November. Obviously, West Ham playing against Tottenham. That's why I had those stats ready. But like Manchester City with the ability to score goals, especially with Bunny Shaw. Okay, guys, thank you so much for joining Attacking Third. Beautiful. Watch the WSL this weekend. Watch Scoreline. I'm going to be on. And catch us on Monday for more Attacking Third.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.